Welcome to Artistic Leadership from the Prairie. This is a monthly radio program that's coming from Ortonville in West Central Minnesota. My name is Edie Barrett. I'm an author, poet, and a fine artist. I'm attending the Humphrey School of Public Affairs, which is part of the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I'm pursuing a master's degree in public affairs, hoping to use art as a vehicle for social change and engagement. This radio show is a self-designed class project. Artistic Leadership from the Prairie is made possible through Ortonville's economic development and funding through the Blandin Foundation. I have invited my friend Lauren Carlson of Dawson, Minnesota, to be part of this seven-month radio show. Lauren, I'd love it if you would introduce yourself and tell the audience a little bit about who you are.
I'm Lauren Carlson, and I'm a poet living in rural Dawson, Minnesota, with my husband and three sons. I just this year started as an MFA candidate at the Warren Wilson Program for Writers, which is a low residency program. It means I'll be going to North Carolina twice a year for intensives and then being paired with a mentor throughout the rest of the year studying poetry. And so I also work as a teaching artist in my community, which means I provide arts-based content for schools in the area.
Thank you. So in this show, we're going to be exploring landscape, leadership, and poetry. So in the last show that we just recorded, it was about your poem and called The Lesson. So that's our topic for these two recordings.
So I'm wondering, Edie, if you would like to start off. Last time we closed with the poem, but maybe this time we'll change it up and have you start with reading the poem, and then we'll go into our conversation about leadership, landscape, and poetry.
Okay, great. So this poem is called That's What I Needed. That's what I needed. Really needed. I needed to curl up in the hollow of an old tree like some wild animal, a squirrel, a fox, maybe a badger, then circle round and round, rearrange the dirt, prepare my bed, make my own warmth. I needed to fall into a deep winter slumber, a hibernation, that's what I needed, to be still and silent and find my way back to myself. I needed to sleep through the cold darkness of winter with the aurora borealis swirling overhead, my dreams merging with the miracle of the blues and the greens. I needed to awaken in a soft spring rain, smell the mustiness of the earth now mingled with my roots, deeply planted. From the inside of the tree, I needed to watch the white clouds gently float across the blue sky, effortlessly. I needed to feel my own wings open and spread with the call of the wild geese. And that's exactly what I did. I slept and I dreamt, and now I rearrange my bird's nest hat and I tilt it ever so gently to one side.
Thank you, Edie. I love the ending of that poem, but before we move to that lovely image of the hat tilted on the head, I'm wondering if you could speak to this, especially in this moment we're experiencing right now. I needed to sleep through the cold darkness of winter.
So I think that there's something that happens in this place of cold darkness. It's kind of like the incubation of silence and reflection and stillness. And that is so much a part of this unique culture here in this landscape, where we actually do have to hunker down. And the reason why we're 1 month behind on these radio shows, we weren't able to do January simply because of the weather, with Lauren having to travel to come to Ortonville. So there is just something of, it's just not an option to go out in the weather. We don't have control over it, you know, and it's a sense of respecting nature, right?
Yeah, I know we had talked about this before, that it is so, it's so dangerous and so ordinary, such an ordinary part of your experience of the seasons living in Southwest Minnesota. I do remember when I moved here, I grew up in Michigan and also in Chicago, and we have cold and snow. But when you add in this factor of wide open landscape, and then you have remnant prairie, so much of it is tilled fields with very little root systems to hold any snow. There's some like grove cover, but when you add that wind,
yeah,
it's just tremendously powerful and dangerous. So we were talking about the humility that comes with that, and I'm wondering if that has meant anything for you since you've moved here from California, where I'm assuming this was not really a possibility.
Well, you know, there's something about it. I think there's a part of me that I still am appreciating the novelty of it. And it's kind of like high seas adventure, you know, where I light the fire in the fireplace and make another cup of coffee and, you know, surrender into what it means to be surrounded by that climate, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't last forever. So that's also part of it is, and actually one of the, I think the beauties of the seasons is it's changing and it will be changing. And so I know it's temporary.
Yeah, that transitions really well, that temporariness. We do know it's not a permanent state as of yet. That polar wind moving down from its normal spot. But I was wondering if you would maybe talk about in your poem, the end is not end with you hibernating in your den ceaselessly. What comes is a spring, and with the spring is a change in the behavior after this period of dormancy. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about that and how it relates to leadership.
I think what really happened with that is I felt a sense of responsibility to re-engage with the world. And what that meant is going back to school and exploring leadership through education. And so that I can engage with the world in a larger way, that I have the skill set to be having challenging conversations, mm-hmm. I suppose is what I want to say.
Yeah.
But I think that there's something profound about what it means to live here in the silence and to now want to re-engage with the world in a different way. And I actually think I bring that landscape of the prairie with me into conversations. Mm. And I think it has a unique, I think there's a uniqueness to that.
Yeah, that reminds me of something we were speaking about, which was this idea, this relationship of this period of dormancy that happens in winter. And because of very real external requirements that are dangerous, like I might have the illusion that I'm safe traveling in my car, but the reality is if I'm out in the prairie and get a flat tire and it's 60 below wind chill, I'm not going to live very long if I get out of my car, especially if it's windy and there's like a travel ban and the sheriff isn't going out to get anybody. But one thing that we, the gift of that, that openness, that stillness, is the gift of unexpected time, because now all of the things we were obligated to mm-hmm. do, we all in humility know that we cannot get out to do them. And instead, we're able to do something else. And that while we were home in the blizzard, I came across this article that talked about a concept called time poverty. And it's the idea that so many people now in our contemporary world with all the technology that we have lack the ability and this time to unplug figuratively from all of those external expectations and that busyness and that even the perception that everything is always intruding on us makes us feel as though we have less time than we do. And I'm wondering maybe if you'd like to talk about how the privilege of being out here and having maybe that the gift of the openness or the gift of time from winter.
Well, I think, you know, I have actually really thought that this idea of having lived such a quiet, kind of almost monastic lifestyle is sort of an oxymoron in terms of leadership. But I'm finding there's a really interesting correlation between solitude and leadership. Mm-hmm. And I'm actively seeking out writers about this for school, because I find that this is the cross section that I'm in. And so it's a very famous article written by a man named William Derwerowitz, and he's actually a Yale academic, and it was a presentation that was for the United States Military Academy at West Point. And basically what he is saying about this aspect of silence is that it is essential for leaders to actually have the capacity to be in silence so that they can hear themselves. And he believes that's where creative thinking comes, where we are not actually listening to the voices of other people, but instead seeing solitude and silence as essential for our own creative thought process.
Yeah, and also, I mean, part of that, I think, too, is being comfortable in silence makes space for people that might otherwise not have the opportunity to be heard, have an opportunity to say something. Because it's not all these, you know, I think you've probably been in a setting like this where people are get really heated in a conversation, and this is like people are jumping in, talking one right after the other. And if you're a quiet person who's very reflective, or if you're a marginalized person who gets pushed out of conversations, there's not going to be any space for entry. But a leader who can say, let's all take a moment, let's pause this and make room. What an asset, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, I really recommend this article to anyone in the audience. He also speaks on TED Talks, but you know, one thing that he's saying is that that we have a real crisis in leadership, and not only in the military, but in corporations and all kinds of businesses, because we have, you know, for generations, what we have rewarded is status quo and conforming, because there's an ease in that. Mm-hmm. And this aspect of being silent to hear ourselves is, he defines it as absolutely necessary to separate ourselves from technology and all the voices.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing is it's like the voice of the imagination, of creativity, right, of what's divergent or what's non-conforming.
Mm-hmm. So one thing, as we're winding down in time, I feel so compelled to do this, so I'm going to. I just want to acknowledge the passing of Mary Oliver. She passed away in January, and I know that she was just an amazing poet. I know that you and I have talked about Mary Oliver's work many times. Mm-hmm. She is a very famous poet of nature. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to acknowledge that. Is there anything you want to say about Mary Oliver?
There's so much I could say, but I feel compelled to just be still with the silence that we'll have now that she's no longer with us. I think it's a great loss.
It is a great loss. So I'd like to say thank you, Lauren, for being here and being part of this show, and I will look forward to our future conversation, which is going to be focusing on the urban-rural continuum. And thank you to our listening audience for being with us on this. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody.